are starting a new Mishnah, the second Mishnah of the first Perek of Pirkei Avos, and now the Shiur is even more relevant because this is the time of year that we learn Pirkei Avos, Shabbos, Mincha time. So even though we're not going to be keeping up with the chapters that we learn weekly, but like a broken clock, at least twice more during the summer will be on time, because we learn Pirkei Avos through three times. The first two times is each week a different parak, and the third time we couple two prakim together to finish Pirkei Avos three times before Rosh Hashanah. So we're going to definitely still be in the first parak for the duration of the summer. There is no shaila in that. But we will come back to the first parak two more times. So twice those weeks we will be right on target. Okay. This Mishnah says the following. Shimon HaTzadik Haya Mishiyore Knesset HaGdola. The first Mishnah spoke about the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the 120 Talmidei Chachamim. Amongst them were the last of the Nevi'im, Chagi, Zechariah, and Malachi. And they constituted the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. And they were the ones who instituted most of our prayers, the institutional nusach, right, the institutionalized version of Shmone Esrei, of our most of the brachos were instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and they were the ones that instituted Purim. Mordechai and Esther only suggested it, but they didn't have the power to make a institution of Purim, to make a takana, to make it binding on the Jewish people. Only the Anshei Knesset HaGdola could do that. So they were the ones who wrote Megillas Esther, Baruch HaKodesh. And they were the bridge between the end of the first Beis HaMikdash and the beginnings of the second Beis HaMikdash. Shimon HaTzadik was from the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. He survived all the other members. He was a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and he survived them. They died before him, and he remained the one to be the torchbearer of the tradition. After the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, he bridged the Anshei Knesset HaGdola with the Zugos, the pairs of Tanoim that came after him. And Shimon HaTzadik, we're going to first learn the commentary of the Abarbanel. Before we get to the Mishnah itself, we want to give a little historical background to Shimon HaTzadik, which the Abarbanel gives. Shimon HaTzadik had another name. His name was also Hananya. And in fact, Josephus refers to Shimon HaTzadik as Hananya ben Yehoshua. That Yehoshua was the Kohen Gadol who came back from Bavel with Zerubbabel and was the first Kohen Gadol in the second Beis HaMikdash. That was what's it called? Right. Then there was what's it called Yehotzedek Kohen Gadol, who was the father of Yehoshua, and he was the Kohen Gadol in the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And that Yehotzedek was the son of Ezra HaSofer. So Shimon HaTzadik was a direct descendant of Ezra. Shimon HaTzadik was given the name Tzadik because he was an extraordinary Tzadik. And some say, you see from here, that being a Tzadik is greater than being Kohen Gadol, because they didn't call him Shimon Kohen Gadol, but Shimon HaTzadik. The Kohen Gadol you get because of, to a certain degree, birth. A Tzadik you don't inherit, you get on your own merit, so therefore a Tzadik is greater than even a Kohen Gadol. To which is an echo of what Chazal say, Gadol Am Ha'ar, Talmud Chacham, Mamzer, Mi Am Ha'aretz Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol who's an Am Ha'aretz. Doesn't have anything special about himself except his yichus, is not as great as a mamzer who doesn't have any yichus, but he's a Talmud Chacham. So same thing over here, better to be a tzaddik than to be a Kohen Gadol. So Shimon HaTzaddik was called HaTzaddik and not referred to as Shimon Kohen Gadol. In any case, he was the Kohen Gadol for 40 years. Now that was very unusual in the second Beis HaMikdash, because in the second Beis HaMikdash there were hundreds of Kohanim Gedolim in the 420 years that it existed, because the Kohanim Gedolim were not necessarily the most qualified people for the job. Many of them bought their way in. They were qualified, but not the most qualified. Other people should have been given the position, but they bribed the Roman powers to be to instate them as Kohen Gadol. And because of that, they usually did not live out their year, because having gone into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and not being the most qualified person for the job was a death sentence. And most of them did not live out the year of being a Kohen Gadol, so they had a constant turnover of Kohanim Gedolim. You see, though, their greatness. It was worth it to them to be able to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, even though they knew that they may not make it through the year, but it was worth it. Right? That one experience of being able to be the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur was worth even dying for it. So that also says something special about these people. In any case, Shimon HaTzadik, unlike all the other ones, he came before most of them. He was the Kohen Gadol for 40 years. And many open miracles occurred during his tenure as Kohen Gadol. Amongst them, the Ner Ma'aravi, the western light of the menorah, didn't go out for 40 years. It always remained on for the entire 40 years. A bit much bigger nes than Hanukkah, where it burned for 8 days. Here it burned 40 years. The fire on the Mizbeach, on the altar, never was deflected by the wind during the 40 years that he was Kohen Gadol. There was a bracha in the Omer and the Shtei HaLechem and the Lechem Aponim. Lechem Aponim was the bread that they left on the Shulchan and from Shabbos to Shabbos, and the Kohanim ate it. And because there was a multitude of Kohanim to eat those 12 loaves of matzah, right? Each one only got a very small piece. But there was a special bracha that even if they got a kezias, it filled them up, and there was even left over. The same thing went with the omer. The omer was brought on the second day of Pesach from barley, also was divided amongst all the Kohanim, and they each one got a very, very small portion, but it was filling. And the same thing with the Shtei Alechem, the two loaves of chametz bread that are brought together with the Shavuos sacrifice also was divided amongst all the Kohanim, and each one got a small amount, and it was very satisfying, and even they left over. Another thing that happened in the time of Shimon HaTzadik was a famous maisa that's brought down in the Gemara, that they made a holiday to celebrate. Alexander the Great, Alexander of Macedonia, in Hebrew he's called Alexander Mokdon, so he came to wage war with Darius, who was the king of Persia. And he passed through Eretz Yisrael. And the Shomronim, who were our enemies, who had their temple on Har Gerizim, because still till today the Shomronim are up there, Har Bracha. So they were our enemies, and they wanted the Beis HaMikdash destroyed because it took away their power and their kavod for their temple on Har Gerizim. So they went, and when Alexander the Great entered Eretz Yisrael on his way to Yerushalayim, they convinced him that the Jews were rebelling against him and plotting against him and were in cahoots with the Persians, and that he should destroy them and destroy their temple. And Shimon HaTzadik got wind of this, and he took an entourage to meet Alexander the Great. And they traveled towards them, and they met on the way to Yerushalayim. And when Alexander the Great saw Shimon, and Shimon HaTzadik was wearing the begodin, the big day kahuna, out covered for Alexander the Great, even though a Kohen Gadol was really not allowed to wear those begodim outside the Beis HaMikdash, but here it was pikuach nefesh, and he felt that out covered he had to come out in his total attire. And Shimon HaTzadik, what's it called, when Alexander the Great saw Shimon HaTzadik, he was traveling now together with these Shomronim, who were urging him to destroy Yerushalayim and kill the Jews. So he got off his horse and bowed down to Shimon HaTzadik. So the Shomronim said, "What are you doing? Why are you bowing down to this Jew?" He said, "I'll tell you." He said, "Before I go into battle, I always see the image of that man who goes before me. And whenever I see the image of that man before I go into battle, I'm successful." So he's the one. Now I really see him in person. So I shouldn't bow down to him. And he asked Shimon HaTzadik, so they spared Yerushalayim. Not only did he spare Yerushalayim, but the Jews said that the Shomronim totally fabricated what they were saying. Jews are loyal, not on the side of the Persians. And they went and destroyed the temple on Har Gerizim and killed the Shomronim. They tied them to horses and dragged them through the streets to take revenge. And that is really what we should do. I don't know the truth. I don't really want to end up in jail. But if you want, what, to who? No, not to the Shomronim. No, not to the Shomronim. To the people who wreak havoc on us, when we catch them, we shouldn't hold them until we can give them back 1,000 of them for one Jew, right? But we should, nothing to clap about. This is, any sane person would say this.
I know.
Because unfortunately, there are many insane people who run this country.
Exactly.
What we should do is take them, those two young animals that killed that family, right, are not human beings, and they don't deserve to be treated like human beings. What they deserve to be done is to take them, and if I had my way, to cut off their fingers slowly so they never lifted their hand against another Jew, and they should suffer for it slowly. Then their arms, and then their legs, and then gouge out their eyes, and do this publicly, and hang their bodies where all these other people who would want to do the same thing will see what happens to people who do that, who act like animals, are treated worse than animals. That's what we should do. And that will send a message to our enemies that evil doesn't pay. And this is what happens to people who act worse than animals. But what we do with them is we have misplaced mercy. We're merciful on the achzorim, and we are cruel against merciful people. Right? All these leftists who yimach shemam v'zichram, they surely can't be Jews, who went to comfort the families of these chayas. Did they go?
Yeah.
There were a group of Jewish leftists who went there to comfort the family of these animals. And they didn't go to comfort the Fogels. That, they didn't walk into Itamar. But to walk into the Arab village, just too bad that the Arabs didn't take care of them. That's my only regret, that they didn't give them, because they've done that before. People who've helped them and people who've had rahmanis on them, they turned on them and ended up killing them, whether they were Jews or Christians or whatever, that went to help these chayas. So when I read what they did to the Shomronim, and I see people here cringing, right? Don't cringe. There's an idea of nekama, of taking revenge on people who want to hurt you and harm you. You're not supposed to treat them nicely. You're supposed to treat them in a way, the way they function.
But women are naturally more rachmonim than men.
Okay, but there are exceptions to that. Yael made it into Shiras Devora because she had the guts to take a tent pin and put it through Sisera's temple. Right? Right. She destroyed his temple. That was a woman. And there were other women in Jewish history who also acted right same way. It depends who you're talking about. We're talking about human beings who deserve to have mercy on them. Even our enemies are supposed to have mercy on, but the people who are chayes, who are the dregs of society, the mitzvah is to destroy them and to let the rest of the world know that we won't stand for this. And this is what happens to people like that. And it just, what makes me cringe is when we treat them with as if they're human beings. That is the worst thing. And Baruch Hashem, today is a Yontif, even though it's Yom HaShoah, but Osama bin Laden was killed. Too bad that they killed him so fast. Would have been better had they captured him or whatever, but they probably would have let him off on some kind of, you know, in America, right, some kind of technicality, and then paid him pizzuim also probably. That's probably would have happened. So it's good that he's dead. But it's a yomtiv, and I'm just hoping that the Hamas will come out with some idiotic statement, right, decrying the Americans for killing him, right, of, you know, targeted killings or whatever. I'm surprised the world didn't come out and upset about with America that they had these targeted killings against terrorists. When we do it, right, it's 100% not right, and the whole world yells at us. And when America does it, it's a yontif. So it's a terrible double standard, and you let me get this off my chest, so let's get back to Turkey Auto. Okay, in any case, so that's what they did to the Shomronim, and Ken Yovdu Kol Eivecho Hashem. Okay. And then Alexander the Great said that in commemoration of the fact that he spared the Beis HaMikdash and didn't destroy it, and his triumphant march into Yerushalayim, he asked that a golden statue be put of him in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Heichal. So Shimon HaTzadik told him, in very nice but no uncertain terms, that we are not permitted to put statues in the Beis HaMikdash of anyone. But, he said, in place of that, I have two ideas to honor you and your coming into Yerushalayim, and to thank you for sparing the Beis HaMikdash. The first one is that all the children of the Kohanim, any children born this year to the Kohanim, not to Stam, regular Jews, but any children born to the Kohanim this year will be named Alexander in your honor. And that's how the name Alexander became a Jewish name. Because people are named for Alexanders who were named at that time in the honor of Alexander the Great. So there are plenty of Alexander senders is obviously not a Jewish name, but it became a Jewish name in honor of Alexander the Great and this Meissen. Second thing was that this was exactly 1,000 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim was in the year 2448, and this was the year 3448. And Shimon HaTzadik says, in your honor, we will now date all our documents, including divorces or whatever, that this should be year one. So from now on, we will date our documents from this year that you entered Yerushalayim. That will be year one, and all our documents will be based on the 1,000 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. We don't do that anymore. We date documents now from Brias HaOlam, from the creation of the world. But in the time of Chazal, they dated documents. It was called Minyan Hashtaros, and it was 1,000 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. That was Minyan Hashtaros. That was year one. And they all documents, including divorces, ksubas, were dated in the time of Chazal, Minyan Hashtaros. Okay. Okay, it says that Shimon HaTzadik knew the year he was going to die. He said, how do you know? He said that every year when I go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, I saw a person dressed in white who went in with me and came out with me. This year when I went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the person was dressed in black and he went in and he didn't come out. Now, the Tosfos asks, no one is allowed to be in the Heichal even when the Kohen Gadol goes in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It says below, the Chol Adam lo yiyeh ba'ol moed bevoa lechaper ba'kodesh. No human being. In fact, the Gemara says not even angels who are called Adam are allowed to be. Even angels. Only the Kohen Gadol can be there. So how could it be that he saw... One of the simple answers is there wasn't actually somebody there. It was a prophetic vision. He saw a vision of somebody. The Tosa says maybe it was the Shechina. Kibiyachal, it was the Rabbonu Shalom himself. Not that the Rabbonu Shalom came in the guise of a person. That's not our religion. Right? God doesn't come as people. But what it means is that God represented himself in a prophetic vision to Shimon HaTzadik when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, his Shechina, represented in a prophetic vision, just like the prophet saw God sitting on a throne, an old man. That doesn't mean that God was an old man sitting on the throne. It means, just like the Navi saw a symbol of wisdom that was a menorah. That doesn't mean the menorah is wisdom. It means the menorah is a symbol of wisdom. That the Navi is shown a symbol to understand the concept of wisdom. He's shown a symbol. To show, to understand God, he's shown a symbol. The symbol of God is sometimes a man sitting on a throne. When he sees that symbol, he knows that represents God. But that's not God. He's not seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's seeing a symbol that represents the Ribbono Shel Olam in prophetic vision. So to over here, the Kohen Gadol, right, saw prophetically in a vision this apparition going in with him, dressed in white, and coming out with him, and that was a symbol that the Shechina was accompanying him into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and out of it. And that year, he said, that symbol was dressed in black, and it didn't come back out with me. And I knew that this was the last year I would enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This is the year I was going to die. And he knew, and right after, a week after Sukkot, I think it says, he was Nifter. So that was Shimon HaGadol. What else can I tell you about Shimon HaTzadik, who was Mishiore. Just the fact that they called him also other names. His name, like we said, his name was Hananya. And also Shimon HaShimon. The Abarbanel says that in those days they used to call great people by many names to represent their different facets of their personality. So one person could have many different names. We have Moshe Rabbeinu had 7 names. Many people in Tanakh had many names. The idea being the following. We are used to naming for people. Right? We name for other people, and there's a reason for that. The reason that we name for people today is because we're in Golis, and there's very little continuity and stability amongst the Jewish people. People are constantly moving around, especially in Chutz La'aretz and Golis. Neighborhoods change, people move, cities become not Jewish, and other cities become Jewish, and people don't have roots. It used to be that people were called according to their city. right? That was how a lot of last names come from cities, right? In yeshivas, they used to refer to Bachram on what city they came from, right? That was their name, because there was at least stability in Europe for many hundreds of years. And then after the Holocaust, that's finished. And in America, usually there aren't too many communities that are more than 30, 40 years old, and then the neighborhood changes and people move on. And they even tell a joke, I don't know if it's a joke or it's true, somebody told me it was true, that the Jewish population started in the downtown area of a certain city, and then they moved out to the suburbs. When they moved out to the suburbs, they sold the shul to a church, a Baptist church, a black church.
African American.
Yeah, no, I think black is also okay to say. And then the blacks became more affluent. And the Jews became more affluent, and the Jews moved to a newer neighborhood, and the blacks moved from the downtown area to the suburbs where the Jews had been. So they sold the new shul they built to the same black church. Black church had vacated their building, and they sold it to another thing. So when the shul was, what's it called, ready to move to their new neighborhood, when they, the third generation... So the black minister came to the rabbi and he said, before you build your new shul, could we be in on the planning? Because eventually we're going to get the building and we'd like to have a say in what it's going to be like. So that is, you can go in many communities all over America and see churches with mezuzahs on them.
And Jewish stars.
Right, and Jewish stars. Because that is the reality of people put hundreds of thousands of dollars into schools and into shuls or whatever, and then they leave the neighborhood and they're all either go into ruin or are taken over by goyim. There's ways to do it halachically, yes. That directly, indirectly, whatever. But that's usually who wants a building like that. You can't move into a shul and live there, so it's not a residential thing. Right. It fits perfectly for a place of Lahavdol, Elif Havdolos, a place of worship. So that's usually what happens. So there's not too much continuity and stability in Golos. So what stability is that people know where they come from. So they're named for people. They may not live in the same place where those people live, but they are named for them. That creates a certain continuity and stability. In fact, I saw, you know, the custom is that when we say Yisker, the people who have parents who aren't saying Yisker leave the shul. They don't stay in shul during Yisker. Some say it's an Ayin Hara. Right? If you have parents already, don't stay around where people don't have parents are saying Yisker for their parents, an Ayin Hara. Others say that since there are people who are crying, it would upset the Simchas Yontif of the people who don't have to say Yisker. But I saw a very interesting reason why, and since I'm the Rav and I say all the names and the Kel Mali Rachamims, I see clearly how true it is. Many of the names that are being said are the names of those children who leave, because they're named for the people who people are saying Yisker for. Because I have a son who I named Shlomo for my mother, Olea Shalom's father. Okay? Chaya Bashlomo. Now he has a daughter who he named for my mother. So his daughter's name is Chaya Bashlomo, which was exactly my mother's name. And if that little Chaya, right, will stay in shul for Yisker, she'll hear me saying a Kel Moli Rachamim for Chaya Bashlomo. That's a little unnerving, yeah, to see, to hear your name being announced in a Kel Moli Rachamim. So therefore, the children leave, they shouldn't hear their names being said in a Kel Moli Rachamim. I remember one Erev Pesach, I was driving my son Mati to the Kosel to say Korban Pesach, and I see one of these big, you know, Avil signs, and it said Zev Lev. Very unnerving. I looked at my son and I said, tell me, look this way, do you see me? He said, yeah. I said, now look at the wall over there. what was Professor Zev Lev from what's it called, Machon Lev, had been nifter right before Pesach, and the signs were just up. In fact, people heard about it. The name, his name was Lev, right? I got a call from Dr. Lukens. He called somebody to say, we didn't hear about this. When's Levaya, whatever, what's it called, what, you know, what's doing? I told him, Baruch Hashem, I'm still fine, so, you know, you save it for another time. In any case, I remember once I fell, and I had to be taken away to the hospital in an ambulance because I mamish couldn't move. I fell on my back, and for a while I was just mamish, come out paralyzed. And my son, that same son was about 11 at the time, my father had just been nifter a few weeks earlier, or a few months earlier, and he was at the Levaya, this 11-year-old son, and he heard the hesped that I said for my father. And as they were taking me away in the ambulance, he said to one of my daughters, I better go and prepare a hesped. I don't know why he thought of it 11 years old when they were going to ask him to speak, but in any case. So it's a little unnerving to hear your name mentioned at Yisker. So the children walk out that they shouldn't have to hear their names. But that's the continuity. They're mamish. This is another third generation of the same people around three generations before. It gives a certain continuity and stability to Klal Yisrael. That's what we do now. That's why we name for people. But it used to be they didn't name for people. They had Ruach HaKodesh. They named for occurrences, like in the Chumash. They didn't name children for other people. They named them because Reuven, Reu Ma Vein Beni, right? Ro Hashem, right? Ki Umlal or whatever, Ki Ona, Ki Snua Nochi, right? Shimon, Shoma Hashem, Ki Snua Nochi. So they named for the occurrence. They saw Baruch Hakodesh, or they named what they saw that person's qualities were. The name represented the qualities of the person. And since many great people had many qualities, they had many names. For this respect, they would have this name. A different respect, they had a different name. And all the names represented different aspects of their personalities, that they were called different names at different times or for different purposes or whatever. So it wasn't unusual that great people had many names. So Shimon HaTzadik was also called Hananya. And he was also called Shimon.
One second.
Let her finish and then,
well,
yeah.
Who gave them the name? Like, Yisro had also many
names. Yeah, who gave them the names? I would imagine that people gave them the names. Yisro had seven names. They say it's because he had seven daughters. Every time he married one off, he went bankrupt and changed his name. But that's not really the reason. Yes.
Anyway, I have seen in my young lifetime that it's so important when you name a child and how you think and think and think after the child. As a child grows up, even if you name it after someone, he has some of the qualities and some of the part of the shaman somehow. I may be wrong, but that's...
No. The Gemara says there's two things with the name. First of all, it says that even though parents think that they decide on the name, it's really min hashamayim. The name the person's supposed to have, he gets. And that's why, if by mistake, the father says the wrong name to the person who's doing the naming, then that name sticks, unless there are extenuating circumstances. For instance, he gave him his own name. People get, you know, confused. Recently, I named one of my grandchildren to my son, Yossi. We call him Yossi. And I was the one who was naming the baby. So the baby's name is what's it called? What is the baby's name? The baby's name is. I'll tell you one second. His Yisachar Dov, right? So I said, I asked my son, what's the name? Yisachar Dov. Ben, and I couldn't remember my son's name. It was Yossi. I wasn't say Yossi. I couldn't remember his full name. So till today, I suffer from that in my family, that I don't even know my kids' names. In any case, so, why was I telling you this? Oh, yeah. So if the person makes a mistake, sometimes you get all nervous and you get flustered, and sometimes people have told me their names. When they, instead, they have the name, you know, when they're going to tell me the name of the child and their name, and they got mixed up and they said their name. That doesn't count. You can't name a child, but we don't have juniors in Yiddishkeit. So that not, by Ashkenazim. By Ashkenazim.
Right.
So that doesn't hold. Or whatever, there are other exceptions also. But barring any exception, if the person made a mistake, for instance, he wanted to name his son Shmuel, and by mistake he said Shlomo, then Shlomo sticks, because it's obviously Min HaShemayim. The exception to that, aside from the, is if the father didn't make a mistake, but the person who's doing the naming made the mistake, then it doesn't stick, because the person doing the naming has no right to name somebody else's child. Right? So if he made a mistake, that what he does is irrelevant. But what the father does is relevant. The father has a right to name his child. The okay, so that is how today we name children, and it says that the name of a child is both connects him to somebody else who had that name, and that's usually we name for people that are positive, and if we're naming for a relative, which may not be as positive as possible, you have in mind somebody else also. Sometimes people make the main thing the secondary thing, and the secondary thing the main thing. Once had a situation where there was an almana, a widow, who wanted very, and she had a child who had died, and she wanted very much that they name her grandchild or great-grandchild, for that child that she had. Nobody named for that child yet, and they named with an extra name or whatever. The father of the child, the grandchild of this widow, right, was a by marriage grandchild, wanted a name for his Rosh Hashiva, for his Rebbe. And that would be a big schus for the baby to have the name of a big gadol or whatever. So I took the person aside after seeing how much it meant to this grandmother to have a name for, and I said, let's think this out. Naming your child for a big Rosh Hashiva is definitely a positive thing. But there's no mitzvah in the Torah to do that. There is a mitzvah in the Torah not to upset a widow. And there is a positive mitzvah to make her feel good. So if you name your child for what's going to make this widow happy, you're fulfilling a mitzvah from the Torah. Don't you think that would be a tremendous schus for your child to have a name that made a widow happy? Rather than naming for a big gadol, which is a very big thing, but I don't know of any mitzvah in the Torah that says that you should do that. It's a nice thing to do. But this is a mitzvah from the Torah and possibly an isser to hurt a widow. So he, in the end, realized that maybe it's better to name for, to make the widow happy than to name for a big Rosh Yeshiva, because that, what's it called, that name then will be a schus for his child. Right? Yes?
Unfortunately, there are a lot of problems with not telling him about that.
Yeah.
Is it true you're not supposed to name someone who died young?
Yes. Somebody who was Rei Masli. Rei Masli means the person died young. Young means less than 50, according to Moshe Feinstein. And didn't have children. Both of those things together. But if they die, they have children, and they, what's it called, or people died a tragic death in an accident or something like that, tragically. What we do is we name for people like that, but we add a name. Yeah.
Not so much in his memory, but given his particular situation,
Yeah, but if you can fulfill both things, that's good. However, to name for a name that's not used in the place where you live, right? In other words, in Eretz Yisrael, there are not many, in most neighborhoods, many Sprintzes, right? And if you name your daughter Sprintze, and she goes to a regular Beis Yaakov, and she's the only Sprintze, right? She's going to suffer because people are going to make fun of her name.
That's some old lady named Sprintze leaves her $1 million.
In any case, so yeah, it's. I once asked Rabbi Yoshev. Somebody called me once in a panic that they named their child some really crazy name. How did they get the name? His wife had a dream before the baby was born, and in the dream she saw a forest and a brook. I don't remember what exactly it was, and she named the kid in Hebrew Forest Brook. That wasn't exactly what it was, but it was something pretty close to that. Okay, so imagine. Kid's name was Brook Forest. That was the name because in a dream she saw these two things. And when they named the baby, somebody came over and said, you can't do that. You can't name your child any name you want. It has to be a name. It has to be some name that's somewhere. You can't just make up a name so your child doesn't have a name. So the guy called me frantic. Is that true? Does my child not have a name? Do I have to change your name or whatever? So I asked Rabbi Yoshev. Rabbi Yoshev said, you can name your child anything you want. Chair, table, one, two, three. There are names in the Gemara, whatever, that are, right, Ben Hehe, Ben Bagbag, right? Anything you want. He said, the only thing is, realize what the repercussions will be when that child grows up. And the teacher says, okay, Brook Forest, where are you? Right? And the whole class starts to laugh, right? That's the only cheshbon. You can choose any name you want, but make sure it's a name the child can live with. That was the ikker. That's what he said. Yeah.
So I'm having, on the way to class, taxi driver, he said to me that he was at his own grandson's birth. He was the son there from his grandson. And his son gave the name Nimrod. The Moel said, that is not a good name. I will not. And he said, I will walk down from being Sunday.
Huh?
Is that, I mean, you...
Yeah, the most of the things of what names yes to give are not a custom. But this is a Gemara. The Gemara says we don't name people in the names of Rishoyim. Okay? And we learn it from Pasuk. Shem Zecher Tzadik Livracha, V'Shem Rishoyim Yirka. The names of Rishoyim should rot. You don't want to perpetuate their names. Now, therefore, the Medrash says, did you ever see anybody name his son Haman, Paro, Nimrod? And I knew this Medrash, and I was in a non-frum yeshuv, which when I first came to Eretz Yisrael, I was responsible for that yeshuv also. And somebody was nifter, and I went to be Menachem Avil. And I'm sitting there speaking to the family, and all of a sudden I hear somebody say, Nimrod, are you ready? Little three-year-old walks in, there's little Nimrod. I couldn't believe it. I never heard in my life anybody call their kid Nimrod, but it's a popular Israeli name. To Malamed a little bit schos, the Ibn Ezra happens to hold that Nimrod was a tzaddik.
Why?
He was a hunter who went and hunted animals to be makrif to the Rabbanu Shalom, the Ibn Ezra. And it may not be against Chazal, because Chazal say Nimrod was the arch Russia of the world, and the reason his name was Nimrod is Shehimri Deskola Olam Negara. He made the world rebel against God. Nimrod means merit, rebellion. So they say that originally Hitaka was a tzaddik, and he went off. Well, it wasn't that he started out like that. So originally, what's it called? Hitaka was a tzaddik. So it's not against what the Ibn Ezra. But in any case, they say like this. There are Tanoim named for people who lechora were not the greatest. Rabbi Yishmael.
Yes.
Yishmael Kohen Gadol. Tosa says, how does he name Yishmael? So let's say a few answers. One is, since Yishmael was named by God, an angel told her what to call him, it's an exception. Second, Yishmael did tshuva. He died at tzaddik. So you can name for him. A third answer is that you only can't name for a Rasha where the name of the Rasha symbolizes his Rishus, like Nimrod, that he made the world rebel against God. But Yishmael is a nice name. It doesn't personify his wickedness. So those are three exceptions when you can. There's another exception, and that is if somebody else already has that name. When I had my second daughter, we'll end with this story. I had my second daughter, so her name is Tzipporah Shalamis, but that was not going to be her name. We wanted to call, the thing is like this. My grandmother, my grandfather, my mother's father had been Nifter a few years earlier. My grandmother was looking forward, the first grandchild to get married, that she have a name for her husband. So the first was a daughter, Itarachu. So she was a little disappointed, but okay, the next one. The next one was a daughter again. Now she was really getting nervous. So we knew that she would be happy if we somehow feminized my grandfather's name. His name was Shlomo. So we decided we're going to call her Shlomis. There's only one problem. Shlomis Bas Divri is mentioned in Tanakh, and she was not exactly the most exemplary woman. She was the only woman, right, that had an Egyptian child. Okay, not 100% willingly, but the Gemara says that she was too friendly with everybody, and because of that, she wasn't as tzanu as she should be, and therefore, this is what happened to her. Okay, so Shlomis is obviously not a good name to name, but my Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Gifter Zatzal, his daughter's name was Shlomis. So I figured there must be some reason why it's okay to call your daughter Shlomis, and this is perfect for Shlomo. So I went to Rav Gifter, and I didn't want to be a chutzpan and say, we'd like to name our daughter Shlomis, but we see that it's not really a good name, but you named your daughter Shlomis, how'd you do that? So I pretended I didn't know that. I went to him and I said, we have a reason to name the baby Shlomis, but what about Shlomis Bas Divri? Rav Gifter said, happens to be that my daughter's name is Shlomis. I said, really? And he said, because there was a Malka from the Beis Chashmonoim who was a tzaddikus, whose name was Shlomis. The Malka Shlomis. And we named her for that. There's only one problem. How did that Shlomis get her name? At that time, there was nobody else except Shlomis. But how did... The answer is what I told you before. At that time, they weren't naming for people. They were naming for occurrences with Ruach HaKodesh. She was named Shlomis not because of some other Shlomis. She was named because probably there was peace in her time or something, and they named her Shlomis. So now we want a name for her. We're naming for her, not for the other one. So if somebody else has that name, even though it's also the name of a Rasha, right, or somebody who's not so exemplary, you can name for the other one who has that same name. That's also an exception. I don't know how we got on this. Oh, yeah, because Shimon HaTzadik was also called Hanan. Oh, so in the end, my wife didn't like the name Shlomis altogether, but she was willing to go along with it. So in the end, by mistake, I said Shlomis. Probably my wife, you know, has this control over me, so it in the end, everybody was happy. So, and her name is Tzipporah Shalamis, which we don't call her Tzipporah or Shalamis, we call her Poey. So, in any case, so she remained, her husband doesn't like that too much, because he came into the family after she wasn't really a Poey anymore, but that's what everybody calls her. So in any case, so that's, I don't know, well, everybody was happy after that. We're very happy with her even till today. And Emir Tashem, so I don't know how we got on this tangent with names, but in any case, next time we will get back to the Mishnah, what Shimon HaTzadik said. Okay.